You're listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM HD, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and on the web at kfai.org. For the next 60 minutes, you'll be hearing The Wave Project, KFAI's weekly community access hour. If you'd like to produce your own one-hour radio program, information on applying can be found at kfai.org/waveproject. The views expressed on this program are those of the persons expressing them and do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of Fresh Air's Incorporated Board of Directors, volunteers, or staff.
Welcome to the Wave Project. That was John Batiste from Beethoven Blue 2024 release, his version of Fur Elise. John Batiste. I'm Maureen Skelly. Today in the studio, I am welcoming Thomas R. Smith. Welcome, Thomas.
Glad to be here. It's been a while.
It has been a while, and Pam Hill running the board for us. Thank you.
Thank you. So, I guess I've been given free rein to start this with whatever I like. So, I'm going to begin with an ode to June. June is still with us, this beautiful month. Not very long, but still with us. Ode to June. Month of most perfect verdancy. Leaves in their greenest hues, unspoiled by time. Month of the great bird chorales. Month of the occupied wren house music box. Month of exquisitely mingled rain and shine. Month of the first swim, easing into the water after frozen and cold times. Month of proliferation of lilies. The tiger, the day, the stella d'oro, each in turn, opening trumpets, skirts, stars. Month of rampant grass growth, humblest leaves crazy to assert their superiority over the mower. Month of vines, tendrils, shoots, suckers stretching with their hunger to live toward the sun. Month of endlessly expanding sky, as if each day were its own big bang, creating a universe. Month of solstice, shortest nights and longest days, a golden ball balanced on a black stick. Month of unshakable light. Month of turtles clambering from the river for their annual egg-laying along the roadsides. Month of bicycle rides among cornfield swell, woods and hills throbbing under hot hands of the sky. Month of inventive cloud forms dispensed by the immense ice cream scoop of heaven. Month of earth trembling in the grip of life. Month of firmament holding earth in her love grip. Month of nights shrugging covers to the floor in the dark, sultry heat. Month of long twilight, keeping us awake like children unwilling to come in from our play to sleep. So, thank you, June. Thank you, June.
And thank you for the storm, the rain we've had. Mm-hmm. I think whatever deficit we had in rain is made up by now.
I think we have. So I was driving in here. I saw a tree over on Franklin Avenue that was drooping over the road. I think it must have got hit last night in those big winds.
Mm-hmm. So you wrote a book of poems for each month. I believe.
I have written different kind of calendar series poems. It used to be something that the old poets did. A particular favorite of mine was the English romantic poet John Clare, who had a famous book in his time called The Shepherd's Calendar. So I've liked doing this too. My poet friend Tim Young actually got here ahead of me. But I saw what a good thing it was, and I've been adapting it for myself, too. So I have different calendrical sequences in various books of mine, and probably will again.
Mm-hmm. Are there any books you want to talk about particularly right now, having published many books in your life?
No. You know, I remember one time I told my dad, I worked up the courage to tell my dad, Dad, I love you. And his reply was, I love all my children the same. So that's kind of the way I feel about my books, too. But I'd like to do a couple of my older poems that I'm, particularly fond of. And there's one called Keeping the Star. Okay.
That is one of my favorites, and that was the first book.
Yeah, that was the title of the first book, too. So I think I can recite it from memory. So here goes. If I don't, you know, you can pick me up out of the off the curb. Keeping the star. Keep this star for when you lose the world. When grief and desire become a blurred door that floats away across a plain book without plain room without books or kisses. I'm sorry. Look to what grows dark beyond the walls. That in night which holds the blue sky singing in its black embrace. It's all spun around a necessary star, star of prisons. Keep it. It has the power to burst from dull thoughts, breathe in airless colors, and roll back the filth of our neglect. Let it pour through the chimney hole patched with tin. Unloved objects, empty jars, faces in clippings, balls of hair spurned by the brush. All the children of failure will step forward in its blinding wind, sons and daughters of that before which there is no trivial being. So,
thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I have a particular fondness for that one because I think it was the first good poem I wrote. I had just turned 30 and I'd been kind of trying a little bit of this and a little bit of that in my life. Tried to write fiction for a while, tried to be a songwriter for a while, tried to be an artist for a while. But somehow at age 30, it became clear to me that poetry was the arrow that I had in my quiver that was going to fly the farthest.
Mm-hmm.
And I was off... I was working for a little community arts organization over in western Wisconsin called Arts People of Wisconsin, and was working with some more experienced writers, and they lived over by Prairie Farm, Wisconsin. And I would go over and visit them sometimes, and they would always send me back with an armload of books, you know, to read, to be inspired by, to be encouraged and broadened by. And it was after one of those trips that I drove home. I was kind of groggy from lack of sleep, and I sat down at my desk and I dashed off that poem in a couple of drafts, pretty close to what you heard today.
Mm-hmm.
And I always said that the thing that amazed me about it most was I wasn't a good enough poet at that time to write a poem that good. So it seemed like a real gift, and it also seemed like a signal that was telling me, you know, keep going. You know, this is something you want to stick with. You know, here's a little treat for you along the way at the beginning. So that's why I particularly treasure that poem.
I'm so happy to hear it. It's always been one of my favorite poems, and you know, I have some poems where I remember the circumstances over after 40 years, 50 years, where there's something different about what it precipitates writing that poem, you know, and sometimes it is a gift, you know, whose voice is it, you know, that comes through us sometimes.
Oh, I believe that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, there was no way I had the chops to write that poem at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else I'd written up to that point was, you know, kind of a real struggle. That one just, wow, was lightning. It was my first lightning strike.
Well, it touches poems that touch on the eternal, whatever.
Yeah.
However we perceive that individually.
Yeah, you know, that's right.
It's like a doorway. A door opens and we sense it or feel it. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. That. Some door had been opened for me. And it was an important time for that door to open because, you know, I was past 30 and I still didn't know, you know, what the hell is going to do with my life. So I was desperate. I want to read you another poem from fairly early times. This is a love poem, and this is also a poem about beginnings, and it's really set pretty much in the time period of the first one I read, Keeping the Star. And it's called The Strawberries. One summer evening, the year we found each other in the dark of Wisconsin, we sat on your porch, drinking glasses of chilled white wine. How quickly the August heat stole into them as we fingered perspiring stems. Afterward, I'd walked nearly two blocks from the amber-lit steps of that house where next autumn we'd both live, when I heard you behind me as if called by my longing for you, running breathlessly to press in my palm strawberries, still cold from your icebox. Now the simple days and nights when we stood revealed in each other's light for the first time are gone. Gone as the sleepless affection of those weeks. I will not mourn them. They were seeds that entered earth to make a place for our desire to grow. You brought those first fruits of a summer's plenty to my open palm and blossoms that gave brief glories to the bedsides of our loving. The harvests already taken are alive in the new harvest. And the strawberries of that summer night so long ago, whose red pulp passed from chill to warm on my tongue and then in newfound boldness given with a kiss on yours, shine in us still, red constellation by which we reckon our position, begin again to lose our fear and find once more original courage that brought us near in the beginning.
Original courage, which we hope to keep with us for a lifetime. Thank you, Thomas R. Smith. We're listening to Thomas read from some of his poetry. And throughout the years in varying books, I have appreciated and enjoyed the writings that you've done of relationships and your marriage and some of the beautiful poetry you've written. I remember a poem about sitting in a boat when you were newly married and, to have a positive, loving, successful, enduring relationship that is so beautifully written about and sharing it with, the public is very inspiring. It's been very heartwarming and inspiring to many of us, So I wanted to thank you for that.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you. In some ways, Krista and I were lucky enough to find each other after a lot of our kind of more aimless running around years were over. We met at the right time and it's been a blessing. So that's an understatement. One thing about that poem, too, I think there's a little bit of influence of William Wordsworth's Ode Intimations of Immortality. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you've picked that up, but that's kind of been one of my favorite poems over my lifetime. And I'm not sure exactly what its hold is on me, but in that poem, Wordsworth is kind of looking back at the glory of childhood vision and mourning the loss of it as we kind of grow into sort of normal routine workaday adults. Mm-hmm. So to me, that that poem is a great defense of the freshness of vision of childhood. And one of Wordsworth's favorite words is glory. And so I've used that a lot myself. That was in the poem I just read. It's also the title of one of my books. So, these poems that, kind of formative poems for us are really important. They're, they're things that we should treasure and keep close to us.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to read the Wordsworth one?
I don't have it with me. And it's very long, but but you know, listeners can look it up if they don't know it. Ode Intimations of Immortality from Recollections of Childhood, I think is the full title. Beautiful poem.
Well, the eternal is also touched upon in the Strawberries poem because of the constellation that people are always using to reckon their direction by. And so, you know, it brings it into, you know, a poem written 40 years ago brings it into the present and the future. Yeah. So another one from the first book.
Actually, that was from the second
book. Oh, the second book.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, you had mentioned a poem here, and if I can find it, I might take it as a request. Mm-hmm. Here it is. It's a short poem called In a Canoe on Clearwater Lake. Mm-hmm. Okay, we took our kind of our nominal honeymoon out by Clearwater Lake, out in a little bit west of the cities. In a canoe on Clearwater Lake, each stroke of the paddle raises the coolness of autumn. Reeds brush the sides and bottom of the canoe. Even those stiff and brown with age bend as we pass. You and I, married only these few days, float above so much we do not see. Our small craft drifts negligently when we do not stir the water. I'm not sure what that last line meant. I'm not sure I knew when I wrote it, but there's something in there about we can't let things be too drifty for us. We really have to pay attention to this idea of being together and being committed to each other and married.
You just reminded me of the song Fairy Tale by Willie Murphy. Are you familiar with that?
Mm-mm.
Okay, I don't know if we'll have time, but it just came to mind.
I've heard it back in the days when Willie was playing.
Yeah. Should we listen to some music here?
Yes, and actually this one coming up is a old favorite of Krista's and mine, so it fits right into this section of things.
If my words did glow with the gold of sunshine, and my tunes were played on the harp unstrung, would you hear my voice come through the music? Would you hold it near as it were your own? It's a hand-me-down. The thoughts are broken. Perhaps they're better left unsung. I don't know. Don't really care. Let there be songs to fill the air. Rippled in still water, when there is no pebble tossed, nor wind to blow, reach out your hand. If your cup be empty, if your cup is full, may it be again. Let it be known there is a fountain that was not made by the hands of man. There is a road, no simple highway, between the dawn and the dark of night. And if you go, no one may follow. That path is for your steps alone. Ripple in still water, when there is no pebble tossed, no wind to blow. You choose to lead, must follow. But if you fall, you fall alone. If you should stand, then who's to guide you? If I knew the way, I would take you home. La da da da, la da da da.
The 19th annual Bayfront Reggae and World Music Festival takes place July 19th from 3 to 11 p.m. at Bayfront Festival Park in Duluth, Minnesota. Headliners include Jamaican reggae and dance hall artists Romaine Virgo, Charlie Black, and Kenyatta Hill, with culture Nigerian Afrobeats artist Timia. Local favorite Woodblind meets Teague Alexi, and DJ Sound of Fusion from Trinidad. Tickets and more info available online at bayfrontworldmusic.com.
Welcome to The Wave Project. I'm Maureen Skelly, and my host today is Thomas R. Smith.
Thank you. In case listeners are wondering where Grateful Dead and Ripple come into this, that song is an old favorite of my wife Krista and me. And beyond, you know, its obvious beauty as a kind of countercultural hymn, it's also the product of a real honest-to-God poet lyricist, Robert Hunter. Part of the reason the Grateful Dead's music was so good, in my opinion, was because they had Hunter doing lots of Garcia's lyrics. And that song, Ripple, has a poetry secret in it. The poetry secret is this. The refrain is a perfect 17-syllable haiku. So, ripple in still water, where there is no pebble tossed, nor wind to blow. 17 syllables. Totally haiku. And if that weren't enough, the content and the message of Ripple is essentially the content and message of the Tao Te Ching, Lao Tzu's Tao Te Ching. When you look at online, like, and you who choose to lead must follow, that's pure Tao Te Ching. Very, very good advice for any leader, any mm-hmm. ruler, not least in these times.
Mm-hmm.
So I love music that has truly poetic lyrical content. So Robert Hunter is one of my favorite lyricists. So that's why you heard Ripple just now.
Good to hear it. I remember dancing to the Grateful Dead at the old St. Paul Auditorium in like 1976 when they were here in town.
Where was that?
The old St. Paul Auditorium before they built River Place. The Grateful Dead played. And maybe it was 79, sometime in the later 70s. But they were in town, and we were dancing to them.
I was there. It's not that I think I was there, but I believe that the first Dead appearance in the Twin Cities was at the Labor Temple around... around summer 67, Summer of Love.
Oh, okay.
I was there. It was just a couple thousand people and the Grateful Dead. And we were out of this world.
Well, it was happy music. You know, a lot of it was melodic and upbeat and joyful. You know, it was joyful
yes,
music.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
The last time I heard them was they were with Bob Dylan at the old... the one they tore down to build the current stadium in Minneapolis, yes. The domed.
Yeah, the Metrodome.
Yeah, and that the acoustics were really bad then, so
terrible.
It wasn't, yeah.
Terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible.
But it was interesting pairing, you know, Bob Dylan and the Grateful Dead.
But, you know, from where I was, you couldn't tell what song they were playing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this is gonna be kind of a switcheroo here, but you had mentioned joy, and we've been thinking about how hard these times are right now that we're in, and the tendency for people to despair and feel depressed.
Hard to summon up some joy.
And I've been, you know, thinking about a poem by Pablo Neruda that Robert Bly translated. It's called Letter to Miguel Otero Silva in Caracas. And I'm just going to read a long stanza from this, but one of the things he talks about is bringing joy over to our side. Somehow that's what we have to do to make others want to join us. You know, we have a lot of other things that we have on our side too, but joy must be among them. He talks about the name Theocritus in this poem. Theocritus was a 3rd century BCE Greek poet who was known for his pastoral and love poems. So what Neruda is saying is that the authorities liked him when he was not writing political poem. But when he started writing political poetry, they went after him, and he left the country and was in exile for several months. And this is a poem that was written in exile to a fellow poet. When I was writing my love poems, which sprouted out from me on all sides, and I was dying of depression, nomadic, abandoned, gnawing on the alphabet, they said to me, "What a great man you are, Theocritus." I am not Theocritus. I took life and I faced her and kissed her, and then went through the tunnels of the mines to see how other men live. And when I came out, my hands stained with garbage and sadness, I held my hands up and showed them to the generals and said, "I am not a part of this crime." They started to cough, showed disgust, left off saying hello, gave up calling me Theocritus, and ended by insulting me and assigning the entire police force to arrest me because I didn't continue to be occupied exclusively with metaphysical subjects. But I had brought joy over to my side. I think there's a lot of important things there for our time right now, not least getting up and saying, "I'm not part of this crime." Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Speaking up, speaking out.
You know,
we
can think of 100 crimes in the next 5 minutes.
Bringing joy to our side here in the KFAI studios in Minneapolis, Minnesota, with Pam Hill running the board for us.
So, I wanted to get that in there partly, too, just to get a mention of my old mentor, Robert Bly, who was one of the first Americans to translate North Americans to translate Neruda into English. So huge, huge gift that he gave us.
And Thomas, you worked with him for many years.
I did. Worked with him in a couple of different ways. Mm-hmm. I worked as his secretary for over 30 years. Mm-hmm. But then he was my poetry mentor as well, mm-hmm. for even longer than that, and really still is. He's not with us in body anymore, but he's still with me.
Well, the men's movement certainly was wonderful, and all his work to, there was a period where there was the women's lib movement, mm-hmm. and then we had kind of a generation of men that, mm-hmm. didn't, were a little bit mm-hmm. lost with mm-hmm. the mm-hmm. expansion of the role plays mm-hmm. that went on, the traditional roles for men and women. So he did a tremendous service to everybody by initiating that movement.
Yeah, and I was a part of that, and I think that made a huge difference in my life. Among other things, it helped me see my way through my old conflicts with my own father, mm-hmm. and kind of get over that and try to understand his point of view a little more, mm-hmm. So that at the time that he died. I didn't feel that we had unfinished business.
Great.
So that was
wonderful.
That wouldn't mm-hmm. have been true, I think, without Robert's work and mm-hmm. without his teaching. Mm-hmm. I probably have a poem from that period in here. Let me just take a look. Yeah. Well, this poem is called. If I can find it, it's called "Admiring My Father," I wrote a whole series of elegies for him after he died. And one of the things that Robert used to talk about was that when we're babies, our first natural love affair is with our mother. We're very close to our mothers. Then when we get a little bit more independent and kind of start toddling away from her. Somewhat, then we have the second love affair with our fathers. And an old photograph, a family photograph, to me was a picture of that second love affair. So I call this admiring my father. And you have to realize that this was written after decades of tension and kind of ego battles, especially on my part. I don't think it was ego so much on his part. He was just different from me, so mm-hmm. I couldn't stand that. Admiring my father. I was at an age when everything he did fascinated me, was by definition admirable. I'd have grabbed the cigar from between his teeth if he'd let me, insisted on pressing the purring head of his razor to my cheek. Half approving, he'd hand over his men's magazines, Cavalier or Argosy. This is not, heavy-duty Playboy stuff, you understand. Mm-hmm. Cavalier or Argosy, missing certain glossy pages. He's gone now, though luckily my mother snapped him slouched on the Davenport, holding me astraddle his waist. I lean into his face, no more than 2 inches separating us, tiny hands gripping his jaw. My expression is enthusiasm for everything about him. His look says he knows it's the best I'll ever give him. When in unsuspecting moments, life washes up to my feet, something he preferred, a color, flavor, or song. In the absence of clear memory, I think of that photo and of those times when I rode high and happy, the ropes secure, the wind filling my sails, and he was the future I steered toward willingly. I don't know yet whether I've reached his shore, though his resemblance grows on me year by year. When the midnight sun of my generation rose, I threw him down in pieces, but now the old antagonisms drop away, and I'm flooded again with the power of loving him. So it's a very emotionally naked poem. there was something about the 60s that really accentuated the tensions, especially between fathers and sons. And I think part of it was that we felt like the old men wanted us just to become cannon fodder and go off to a meaningless war.
Mm-hmm.
There's terrible damage to a whole generation.
Mm-hmm. And it's great. It's good to circle around and just remember that.
Yeah.
When you're young, you get love. Your parents love you. They give you love.
No, yes.
I mean, even if there's no reconciliation for the rest of the lifetime,
yes,
that
right.
starts out with
that's right.
loving, you know, the father loves the son, the children love the parents.
Yeah.
You know, there's that initial love.
Yeah, I mean, there are those unfortunate, abnormal, terrible situations where that's not true, but I think as a rule, that's the way it is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I don't know where I'm going here in my associations here, but I felt that it would be good to kind of touch on a poem that, a book that I published a couple years ago. It's actually my most recent book of poems. It's called Medicine Year. And without going into the story, which people can read in the book, my wife and I both had medical crises, you know, like serious ones, right at the same time that COVID was coming down on us. So I wrote a whole book of poems that year. I found that sheltering in place really, really helped me concentrate.
Mm-hmm.
There weren't as many demands from outside, so, you know... There were certain gifts of the COVID year for introverts that the extroverts didn't experience
True.
So much. But for me, I wrote a whole book of poems, so this is the only book where I've dated all of the entries and, you know, kind of published it like a journal. I want to read a summer poem. It's called Summer Garden. That's a prose poem. If we can be said to have a garden, it's an uncultivated one. Bee balm, phlox, and lilies, none of which we planted, spread out from the south side of the house, claiming more of the yard each summer. It's still happening, too, 3 years later. 5 years later, I mean. This evening, we stand on a narrow strip of lawn between two fragrant patches of red, orange, pink, and white, some almost head high, and watch the lowering sun illuminate layer upon layer of black walnut leaves, ember making the whole world hearth glow. We are not alone. A hummingbird hangs in flight, backlit, its wings a transparency pinned to air. A hummingbird hawk moth sips among the flocks, sampling with its proboscis the flushed blossoms, living to the fullest its few weeks on earth. A bumblebee bobs among the low crimson streamers of bee balm. I would take every one of these into myself to store against the great vacancies of winter. And who knows whether they may not survive in some way the crossing to that farther shore. Maybe there they won't tear my heart as they do here with their fugitive abundance, their gratuitous beauty. Here where I walk on a summer's early evening among the throngs of flocks against the backdrop of sunset and know that I am again standing in wonder and hunger before the gates of paradise.
Thank you. Wonderful poem. We're listening to Thomas R. Smith reading from his book, Medicine Year.
I'm going to do one more from this book. This is kind of a favorite. Part of how I got through COVID time was hanging out and jamming across the back fence with a young musician friend of mine named Colin Cosgrove. He's one of my best musical buddies. So he was home from Chicago, not being in school at that time. He was an intern. He's back there now. And I was at home, just tending myself and Krista and trying to stay healthy. So this is called Back Fence Jam. It's social distancing time, and Colin and I are having one of our jams by the fence between our houses. Colin is a music teacher, just getting started. And me, I'm trying not to finish too soon. Colin is also a bluegrass whiz on guitar and mandolin. And we're out on a gorgeous spring day, playing and singing our hearts out to the grass pushing up from below and the budding trees exploding in slow motion like green fireworks against the clear blue sky. Colin sings The Old Home Place, and I sing Mountain Dew. Often we request favorites of each other, and today Colin asks for Mr. Tambourine Man. I'm always ready to oblige with that Dylan masterpiece, all four verses. And this time, a male cardinal at the top of a big basswood tree joins in. He's way up there, warbling and trilling. I listen for him to stop, but he doesn't. He doesn't stop. He knows this song, too, and keeps singing along. My God, aren't we the trio? The neighbors' dogs, meanwhile, are chasing each other around their fenced-in yard. They're having a good old time, rolling over on their backs, feet kicking the air. Meanwhile, the cardinal, that red flame tipping the highest branch like a candle, is still trilling, and I want to stop singing and yell to the world, this is a textbook example of happiness. So I do. Then start singing again, because I don't want the cardinal to stop. And the song must go on, virus or no virus. We must find ways to keep singing together, even if only across the back fence, and store such moments away in our bones for those other days sure to come, when we find ourselves having to sing out against the silence. Okay.
Okay.
No one knows where we are. It's a long time since I drank champagne. The ocean's blue as your eyes. I'm gonna take it with me when I go. Oh, long since gone. Now way back when we lived in Coney Island, there ain't no good thing ever dies. I'm gonna take it with me when I go. Far, far away. Wherever you're going, wherever you've been, waving goodbye at the end of the day. You're up and you're over and you're far away. Always for you. Forever yours, it felt
just like the old days. We fell asleep on Beulah's porch. I'm gonna take it with me when I go. All broken down by the side of the road. I's never more alive or alone. I've worn the faces off all the cards. I'm gonna take it with me when I go. The children are playing the end of the day. Strangers are singing on along. There's got to be more than flesh and bone. All that you've loved is all you own. In a land there's a town, and in that town there's a house, and in that house there's a woman, and in that woman there's a heart I love. I'm gonna take it with me when I go. I'm gonna take it with me when I go.
Presenting Summer at the Cedar 2025. Summer at the Cedar is a series of free outdoor evening concerts on the Cedar Plaza every Wednesday through August 20th. For the second concert in the series, the Cedar presents Jason Landero, Wednesday, July 16th. Hailing from San Jacinto, Colombia, Jason is the grandson of Andres Landero, the man who arguably invented the music we know today as cumbia. And Jason is carrying on the tradition, keeping the classic accordion-driven cumbia sound alive and updating it for the 21st century. More information for Summer at the Cedar presenting Jason Landero can be found at thecedar.org.
It's time to get on board for the second annual KFAI Blues Cruise. Just go to kfai.org/bluescruise for more information and to sign up. Come. Go rolling on the river with me and the Bambi Alexandra Band, Friday, August the 29th, 7 o'clock p.m. It's a fundraiser for KFAI 90.3 FM.
And you are listening to the Eclectic Collective. I'm Maureen Skelly, and on the air we have poet Thomas R. Smith, who's going to read us a few more of his poems today.
Okay. By the way, that was a Tom Waits song that you just heard that I love very much, and it's really essentially a poem. Every verse has a particular beauty. It's almost haiku-like in a certain way. I'm going to read a couple of poems from a little self-published collection that I used to raise funds for a Supreme Court race in Wisconsin last spring. And we won. So it helped, and I have this
great
little book to show for it. The little book is called The Blue Forest, and I had a dream one night I'll leave it to you to interpret the symbolism. It's called the Blue Forest, and this is essentially a transcription of a dream. In my dream, there was an oppressive red mass on the landscape. It was a red light in the night, warning danger. Inflamed, diseased, angry, those who entered couldn't find a way out. Familiar streets left dark and empty, as if they'd lost power. But there, on that unlit map, I saw a spot of blue, like a piece of sky settled to earth. Calm and healing, those who entered could freely come and go. It seemed to me a kind of blue forest, refreshing and safe, from which to look out onto the overshadowed land with its promise, still alive, to those sheltering in peace. So.
Thank you.
I think it's obvious what that's about. Mm-hmm. Obvious mm-hmm. what that's about.
And it came from a dream.
So a lot of these poems mm-hmm. were written between the elections last November and let's say late winter. So they're very much of a period. I thought I'd do a couple more.
Mm-hmm. We have time for another one at least.
At least one. Okay. actually, this wasn't written during that time. This is an older poem that I included as a kind of prelude to it. It's called We Belong Together. Driving one day in the city, I saw in a library window a sign reading, We Belong Together. A warm hand, a hand of human language, reached up to touch my heart. It was as if some split-off, lost side of myself had spoken. What eros in the story those three words tell. Imagine if we took them for our message. Could anything stop us? What if we came together around the shared beauty of who we really are, beyond labels and identity? If we said, we belong together, and meant it, think what we could do.
You have a little gig you're doing coming up here that you yeah. might want to mention.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I don't have anything in poetry right immediately on the books, but I also do a little I do a little musical duo with my wife Krista, and we are, if you happen to be in the neighborhood of River Falls, Wisconsin, on Thursday, July 10th, at the beginning of River Falls Days, we are opening for my friend Colin, who was in the poem, my friend Colin's bluegrass band called Slapdash Bluegrass, who are wonderful, United Church of Christ, UCC, Congregational Church. And we'll be there about 6:30 and play for half hour, and then Colin and his band will take over. So that's what I have immediately on the book.
Thank you so much, Thomas R. Smith, for being on our show today here.
Well, and thank you for having me. Yeah. The time goes by so fast.
It does, doesn't it?
In all ways, at all times.
Mm-hmm. And Pam Hill for running the board.
Thank you, Pam.
And we're going to go out with Willie Murphy, Fairy Tale, our local West Bank resident, who is still with us in our hearts, Willie Murphy. Mm-hmm.